Welcome to another deep dive. Today, we're going to be looking into agorism.
Oh, cool.
It's this fascinating blend of economics and libertarian Kamasake and this thing called counter-economics.
Interesting.
Our guide for this deep dive is An Agorist Primer by Samuel Edward Konkin III.
Gotcha.
Written back in 1986.
Okay.
But seeing a resurgence in interest these days?
Yeah, for sure.
It basically lays out a vision of how a society could function without any government involvement.
That's a big one.
Yeah, pretty radical concept, right?
Pretty radical.
So what I know interesting about this is that the book doesn't jump right into anarchy.
Right.
It actually kind of starts with basic economics.
Right.
But with kind of a twist.
Interesting. What's the twist?
Yeah, so like one of the first things Konkin emphasizes is this idea of subjective value, which means that the worth of something is really in the eye of the beholder, not some kind of inherent quality.
So like one person's trash is another person's treasure.
Exactly.
Like, I like that.
Right.
Yeah.
He also dives into this concept of marginal utility, which is this idea that each additional unit of a good becomes less valuable to you.
Makes sense.
Think about it, like the first slice of pizza you eat is amazing.
Yeah.
But the fifth one,
not as good.
Not so much.
Okay.
So how does all this tie into this concept of agorism?
Right.
Well, these economic principles,
right,
they actually form the bedrock of the agorist belief in the free market.
Okay.
So the thinking is that if individuals are the ones who determine value and they're acting with their own self-interest, they naturally create these exchanges that benefit everyone involved.
Interesting.
And they argue that this sort of spontaneous order is way more efficient and just than any system that could ever be imposed by like a central authority.
So it's about individual freedom kind of driving a more effective system.
Precisely.
Okay, I like that.
And to understand how this plays out in practice, we need to look at this thing called the counter-economy.
The counter-economy,
Now, this encompasses all activities that happen outside of government regulation.
Okay.
Things like, you know, smuggling, black markets, alternative currencies, all this kind of stuff.
I see. So
the book highlights how vast this counter-economy truly is, even in societies with really heavy regulation.
So you're saying there's this, like, massive underground economy.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Happening all around us.
Wow.
In fact, it even played a role in the collapse of communism.
Oh, wow.
The Soviet Union's black market was actually more robust than its official economy.
Wow, that's really interesting.
So the point is that the counter-economy already exists and it thrives.
Right.
So what agorism does is it provides a moral and philosophical framework for it.
Interesting.
Which is where libertarianism comes in.
Okay, so libertarianism, with its emphasis on individual liberty and rejecting the use of force, kind of becomes the foundation.
It does.
So essentially, all interactions should be voluntary.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
But how does agorism take this theory and actually make it actionable?
That's a great question.
That's where it gets really interesting.
Okay.
Because it doesn't just talk about freedom.
Yeah.
It actually promotes living it out.
Interesting.
So it's this merging of libertarian theory with the real world practices of the counter economy.
Gotcha.
It's less about advocating for freedom and more about embodying it daily.
I see.
Through your choices in the marketplace.
So how does someone live agorism?
Right.
What are they
doing? How we do it.
Practical steps.
Yeah.
What do you actually do?
So Konkin lays out these four key axioms.
Okay.
The first one being that a free market is the closest we can get to a truly free society.
Okay.
Second axiom, that free market can self-correct.
Okay.
Can handle minor corruption or exploitation.
I see.
Without needing external intervention.
Right. Okay.
Third.
Yeah.
The morals of the marketplace actually align perfectly with libertarian principles.
Okay.
And then the fourth axiom states that the more a market is corrupted by government intervention, the higher the cost of protection and risk becomes. So it gets to the heart of the agorist strategy.
Okay.
Imagine a world where those costs and risks are lower. Wouldn't that be appealing?
I would think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And by expanding the counter economy, you create exactly that.
Interesting.
You draw more people in, you weaken the state's control.
I'm starting to see how this all connects.
Right.
Yeah.
But can a society really function?
That's the question, right?
Without any form of government.
Big question.
How would things like roads get built?
Yeah, who's going to build the roads?
How would justice be served?
Right, exactly.
Like,
wow.
These are questions that I think a lot of people have.
For sure. How do we...
So the book actually dives into what a stateless society, what they call agora,
Agora,
might look like.
All right.
And they paint this picture of, you know, privately owned roads, competing mail services, no taxes, no wars.
Sounds pretty utopian.
Sounds pretty utopian, right?
It does.
But what about justice?
Yeah.
Would it be like the Wild West?
Right, exactly.
So instead of police, you'd have these private protection agencies.
Okay.
Insurance companies would ensure fast replacement of stolen goods.
I see.
And offenders wouldn't face jail time.
Right.
But they would be held accountable through restitution.
Oh, no. So instead of punishment, the focus is on, like, making amends and restoring what was lost.
Exactly.
Interesting.
And they believe that competition would drive efficiency and fairness in a way that a state monopoly just can't.
Gotcha. Right.
But this raises another question.
Right.
If this system is so advantageous,
why
haven't we seen it emerge?
Yeah, why not?
On a larger scale.
What's stopping it?
Right.
Good question.
Why hasn't this happened already?
Yeah, it makes you wonder.
And agorists point to this thing called the state in the mind.
State in the mind.
This internalized ascendance of state authority that so many people have. You know, we're conditioned to believe we need this state to function.
To make society work.
Even when our experiences in the counter economy suggest otherwise.
So it's like we've forgotten that there are other ways to do things.
Yeah, it's like we've just forgotten.
Yeah,
so the barrier isn't just like logistical.
Yeah, okay.
It's actually deeply psychological. And to break free from that conditioning.
Right.
Agorist, what they call agorist psychology.
Yeah, agorist psychology, right.
Which is this conscious effort to reject the state's claim to legitimacy and to actively seek way to live outside of its control.
So it's not just about changing the system. It's about changing how we think about the system.
How we think about it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like a call to action for individuals to start making different choices.
Making different choices,
And as more individuals engage in counter-economic activities, they naturally create these networks of trust and mutual support, which makes those activities less risky and more rewarding.
So it's a pretty...
It's a fascinating concept with the potential to really shift power dynamics.
It is. It really
is. In profound ways.
And we're going to get into all that good stuff.
Let's delve a little deeper.
Let's do it.
Into what that looks like in practice.
Absolutely. So one of the things that... people often worried about when they think about a stateless society is the potential for like violence and chaos.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, people are concerned that without a government to enforce laws, things are just going to, you know, descend into anarchy in like the negative sense of the word. But Konkin actually tackles this.
Okay, I'm curious how he does that.
Well, remember, agorists aren't advocating for some kind of like lawless free-for-all.
Yeah,
they believe in natural law, with the non-aggression principle as like the foundation.
Okay.
So in a truly free market, they argue that justice and defense would be treated like any other service subject to competition and consumer demand.
So it's essentially taking those functions that we typically associate with government and outsourcing them to the private sector.
Yeah, that's a bold idea,
It is bold.
But he argues that this could actually lead to a more efficient and just citizen instead of having like a monopoly that has little incentive to improve.
For sure.
You'd have all these multiple providers competing for customers, constantly innovating to offer like the best service.
But wouldn't that create a system where only the wealthy can afford justice and protection?
That's a valid concern.
Right.
But he kind of flips the script on that argument.
Okay.
He points out that even in our current state-run societies, the state often fails to protect the vulnerable.
Oh, interesting.
And he argues that it's actually the state that initiates the most egregious acts of violence.
Oh, wow.
Through wars, police brutality, oppressive laws.
So he's suggesting that the state itself is often the biggest source of chaos and violence.
Part of his argument,
not a safeguard against it.
Yeah, exactly. He thinks that in a truly free market, individuals would have a much stronger incentive to cooperate and find peaceful solutions.
Okay.
Because conflict is costly.
Right.
And without the state to legitimize violence, it carries significantly higher risks.
It's an interesting thought that self-interest could, in a way, lead to more peaceful coexistence.
Right, exactly.
But wouldn't a stateless society be vulnerable to invasion?
Yeah, that's another
other states?
Common objection.
Right.
And he offers a multi-layered defense strategy for a stateless society.
Let's break down those layers.
Okay.
How would a stateless society defend itself?
So first, he argues that a stateless society
yep.
wouldn't be seen as a threat
okay.
to existing states.
Okay.
In fact, it could become a valuable trading partner
right.
offering goods and services without but, tariffs or trade restrictions.
No, so the economic benefits of trade
right.
could outweigh any perceived military threat.
Yeah. Right. There's also the potential for yeah. international solidarity
okay.
amongst, you know, yeah. libertarians and agorists themselves.
Right.
Remember, he helped found the yeah. Libertarian International,
okay.
which aimed to foster cooperation and support across borders.
So a global network
yeah.
of individuals committed to freedom
right.
could provide a layer of protection.
Exactly.
Okay, so what if
yeah.
a stateless society does come under direct threat?
Well, in that case, yeah. he suggests that private protection agencies
okay.
could form larger syndicates
okay.
to defend their clients,
okay.
pooling resources,
yeah.
leveraging technological advancements.
So he's thinking big.
He is.
Yeah.
He even envisions like
okay.
citizen militias rising up
wow.
to defend their freedom.
That's a pretty yeah. fascinating blend of free market solutions.
Right.
And the age-old concept of citizen self-defense.
Exactly. And remember, he's not just theorizing. He okay. draws on
yeah.
historical examples.
Okay.
Like the resilience yeah. of black markets
right.
under oppressive regimes
right.
to demonstrate how adaptable okay. counter-economic systems can be.
Right.
He's essentially saying,
yeah.
look, this already works
okay.
on a smaller scale.
Uh-huh.
Imagine what we could achieve.
Right.
If we expanded it.
Okay. So I keep coming back to this idea
yeah.
of the state in the mind.
Right.
How do we overcome that
yeah.
deeply ingrained belief?
Well, he believed that the biggest obstacle
yeah.
to achieving a stateless society
okay.
was actually psychological,
okay.
not logistical
what?
Or military.
Uh-huh.
It's that we've been conditioned
uh-huh.
to accept the state.
Right.
As necessary
so, yeah.
and inevitable. We rarely question
okay.
its authority.
Yeah, but
that's where agorist psychology comes in. It's the conscious effort
uh-huh.
to reject the state's claim
yeah.
to legitimacy
gotcha.
And actively seek ways okay. to live outside of its control.
So it's a bit like a fundamental shift.
It is.
In our thinking.
Absolutely.
Recognizing that we have more power and autonomy
right.
than we realize.
Than we think we do.
Yeah.
And he calls this counter-economic action.
Okay.
It's making choices
yeah.
in the marketplace that right. chip away
okay.
at the state's power.
Is this similar to the idea
it's
of
silly.
Voting with your wallet?
Yeah, it's similar,
okay.
but it goes deeper.
Okay.
It's about understanding the moral implications
okay.
of our economic choices.
Right.
Every transaction we make,
uh-huh.
every service we use,
yeah.
every product we buy.
Okay.
either supports
yeah.
the state's power
right.
or contributes to its decline.
It's a powerful way of
yeah.
looking at things.
Yeah.
And it kind of makes those everyday actions
right.
take on a whole new level
they do.
Of significance.
Absolutely.
So how do we practically overcome
okay.
that state in the mind?
Right.
That internalized acceptance?
He suggests a few strategies.
Okay.
He highlights the importance of education,
right.
consciousness raising,
right.
and forming
yeah.
supportive communities
okay.
with like-minded individuals.
It's finding your tribe, people who get it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And those connections can be really invaluable.
Yeah. Especially when you're like
right.
challenging deeply ingrained societal norms.
Especially then.
Right.
You know,
yep.
this path isn't always
right.
going to be easy.
It's not going to be easy. There's could be setbacks,
yeah.
risks, maybe even pushback from authorities.
And he acknowledges.
How does he address those realities?
He doesn't shy away from them. He acknowledges
yeah.
the potential for conflict.
Right.
And he stresses the importance of like strategizing
yeah.
to mitigate risk
okay.
and protect yourself.
So it's not just about idealism.
Right.
It's about being
practical.
Practical and strategic.
And strategic
in your approach.
Check.
I'm sensing that this goes beyond economics or politics.
I think you're right.
It's about a fundamental shift
yeah.
in consciousness.
It is.
Like a reawakening.
A reawakening.
To the power of
yeah.
individual choice.
Right.
And the potential to create a world.
Yeah.
where freedom flourishes.
You've hit the nail on the head.
Really?
He believed that agorism was ultimately about
oh.
empowering individuals
yeah.
to realize that they're not helpless pawns
right.
in a system controlled by the state.
That's a powerful.
It is a powerful message.
Message
yeah.
of hope and possibility.
It is.
It's this reminder that
yeah.
change doesn't have to trickle down
right.
from the top.
It can start with us.
It can start with each of us.
Exactly.
Right here, right now.
Right here, right
making
here.
Making choices.
Drive. Yeah.
that are aligned with our vision
yeah.
of a free and just society.
And as more individuals
yeah.
embrace that vision
yeah.
and take action, they
well.
Create a force for change
right.
that even the most powerful state
yeah.
will find hard to resist.
It's a bold vision.
It is.
And it may seem daunting at first.
But if we take his message to heart,
Okay.
And start taking those small, yeah, consistent steps,
right,
towards greater freedom, who knows what we might accomplish?
It's a very complex issue.
It is.
It raises so many questions.
Yeah, tons of questions.
How do we balance,
right,
individual rights,
yeah,
with the needs of the community?
Yeah.
What are the ethical boundaries,
yeah,
of counter-economic action?
Good question.
Is a truly stateless society even possible?
That's the big one.
Yeah.
These are the big questions that, right, he grapples with in,
yeah,
the book.
Yeah.
And he doesn't offer simple answers.
Right.
But he does provide, right, a compelling vision.
Okay.
And a call to action.
A call to action.
He urges us, yeah, to take responsibility for our own freedom,
right,
and start building the world we want to see.
Right.
One transaction,
at a time.
At a time.
I feel like I'm already, yeah, feeling my own state in the mind.
Okay.
It started
kind of
to crack.
Keep that sigh. That means you're engaged.
It's, yeah, definitely a challenging read.
It is, yeah.
But incredibly thought-provoking.
Yeah, it really makes you think.
It's like seeing the world through a new lens.
Yeah.
So how do we take, yeah, these complex theories,
right,
and apply them to,
yeah, how do we make it real,
our everyday lives?
Right, exactly.
How can we start?
Yeah, what can we actually do?
Putting agorisms into practice. Okay, so we've covered, yeah, the theory and the vision.
Right.
But now I want to get into the practical side.
Okay.
Like, how does this,
yeah,
affect the average person?
Yeah, the rubber hits the road.
Yeah, what does this all mean,
right,
for me?
Exactly.
How can I start applying these ideas?
Yeah, what can you actually do
in my daily life?
So Konkin really stresses that, yeah, agorism is more than just an abstract philosophy. It's really a way of life.
A way of life, okay.
He advocates for consistent counter-economic action,
okay,
encouraging individuals to,
yeah,
shift their activities away from the state-controlled economy,
uh-huh,
and towards the free market.
So what does that look like in practice?
Well, it can take,
yeah,
many forms.
Okay. Okay.
Even small actions,
yeah,
can make a difference.
Give me some examples.
Sure. So for instance, buying from,
yeah,
local independent businesses,
okay,
instead of large corporations,
yeah,
that are often intertwined with the state.
Right. So it's about supporting,
yeah,
the little guy.
Exactly.
Making choices,
yeah,
that align with your values.
Exactly. It, right, could also involve, yeah, exploring,
okay,
alternative currencies,
yeah,
participating in,
yeah,
barter networks,
okay,
or even starting, yeah, your own home-based business.
So finding creative ways,
exactly,
to kind of step outside,
yeah,
of the traditional system.
Outside the system.
Even if it's just one foot at a time.
One foot at a time, right?
I like that.
And as more individuals do, so they contribute to,
right,
the growth, yeah, of the counter economy,
yeah,
demonstrating that there are alternatives.
Viable alternatives.
It creates like a ripple effect.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
let's be realistic.
Yeah.
Most people,
sure,
aren't going to become,
right,
full-blown agorists,
yeah,
overnight.
Of course not.
What about those of us,
right,
who are still, you know,
yeah,
working within the system,
yeah,
paying taxes,
sure,
and so forth?
Okay.
Are there ways to engage,
yeah, are there ways
in counter-economic action?
To do it gradually.
Yeah, without completely upending our lives.
Absolutely. He acknowledges, yeah, that not everyone is in a position,
right,
to make these radical changes.
Sure.
He emphasizes taking gradual steps,
okay,
starting wherever you are,
uh-huh,
and slowly expanding your involvement in counter-economic activities.
So baby steps are okay.
Baby steps are great.
It's more about the direction we're moving.
The direction.
Not the speed.
Exactly. Right. Even small acts of resistance,
yeah, uh-huh,
can have a collective impact.
Okay.
Maybe you start by, like,
yeah,
reducing your reliance on government services.
All right.
Or you learn the,
yeah,
new skills,
right,
that make you more, oh, right, self-sufficient.
More self-sufficient, okay.
Hey, just,
yeah,
educating yourself,
right,
and others,
right,
about agorism,
right,
and free market principles,
okay,
is a step in the right direction.
It's about changing your mindset.
It is.
Becoming more aware,
yeah,
of the choices you make,
right,
each day.
Every day.
And how they impact the system.
And how they impact the system, yeah.
This is good stuff.
It's a journey, not a destination.
It's a journey,
right?
Not a destination.
There's no pressure.
No pressure.
To achieve some perfect state,
yeah,
of agorism overnight. It's,
yeah,
about taking those steps.
Okay.
And it's not a journey you have to take alone.
Okay, so community is important.
Community is huge.
Okay.
Talks about forming affinity, yeah, groups.
Okay.
Where like-minded individuals can, yeah, share ideas,
yeah,
resources, encouragement.
Yeah, finding your tribe.
Finding your tribe.
Or people who get it.
People who get it.
Who can support you along the way.
Exactly. And those connections can be so valuable.
Yeah.
Right. So
especially when you're facing those inevitable challenges.
Exactly.
That come,
yeah,
with,
right,
living counter-economically.
It's not always going to be easy.
Right. It's not going to be easy.
Right.
There will be
setbacks.
Setbacks,
there
risks.
Maybe even pushback from authorities.
Pushback from authorities. Exactly.
How does he address that?
He doesn't shy away from it.
Oh,
he acknowledges that there's potential for conflict.
Okay.
And he stresses the importance of being strategic.
Okay, so strategizing.
To mitigate those risks.
Right, mitigate the risks.
Okay, and to protect yourself.
Protect yourself.
Exactly. So it's not just about the idealism.
Right.
It's also about being practical.
Correct.
In your approach.
And strategic.
And strategic. I'm sensing this is deeper
than deeper.
Economics and politics.
It is.
It's really about...
It's about
a fundamental shift.
Fundamental shift.
In consciousness.
Gee, it's like a reawakening.
Reawakening.
To the power of
individual choice.
Individual choice, yeah.
And the potential.
And the potential to
create a world.
The world we want to see.
Where freedom flourishes.
You got it.
Wow.
He believed that agorism was ultimately about empowering individuals.
Right.
To realize that they are not helpless pawns.
Right.
In a system controlled by the state.
Yeah, we're not helpless.
We're not helpless.
This is a really powerful message.
It is powerful.
Of hope and possibility.
It is.
Yeah, it's like this reminder that change doesn't have to trickle down from the top.
It can start with us.
It can start with each of us.
Right here, right now.
Right here, right now.
Making choices.
That are aligned with our vision.
With our vision.
Of a free and just society.
Of a free and just society.
And as more individuals embrace that vision.
Okay.
And take action. Uh-huh.
They create this force for change
right.
that even the most powerful state will find hard to resist.
That's amazing.
It is a bold vision.
It is bold.
And it may seem daunting at first.
Sure it is.
But if we take Konkin's message to heart and start taking those small, consistent steps towards greater freedom.
Towards greater freedom.
Who knows what we might accomplish?
Who knows, right?
The future is unwritten.
The future is unwritten. I love that.
It's up to each of us to decide what kind of world we want to live in.
We want to live in,
and to start building it.
Yeah.
One transaction.
One transaction.
One interaction.
One interaction at a time.
One choice at a time.
This has been amazing.
It's been fun talking about it.
It's been really thought-provoking.
It really is a fascinating topic.
So there you have it, folks.
Yeah, that's agorism.
Our deep dive into agorism.
In a nutshell.
We've only scratched the surface.
Right, we could talk about this for hours.
But hopefully this has piqued your interest.
Yeah, I hope you learned something.
And giving you some things to think about.
Absolutely.
If you're intrigued.
Yeah.
And you want to delve deeper,
right?
We highly recommend checking out.
Yeah, check out the book.
An Agorist Primer.
An Agorist Primer.
By Samuel Edward Konkin III.
It's a good one.
It's challenging, but it is a rewarding read.
Yeah, it'll make you think.
So.
Yeah.
Until next time.
Keep on learning.
Keep questioning.
Keep questioning.
Keep exploring.
Keep exploring.
And keep striving.
Yeah.
For a free future.
For a free future.